You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
In the beginning, there was darkness. Then, out of the void, came fire, smoke, Rodo. Fantasy excellence begins here.
This is your time.
The Rodo Experts in the Morning starts now.
It is Thursday, July 6th, 2017, and this is the Roto Experts in the Morning. Alongside the Fantasy Executive, Corey Parson, the King, Scott Angle, and Wall Street, Matt Modica, I am Greg Sussman. It's refreshing seeing Scotty not playing to a non-existent camera. Corey! Corey, what's happening, man?
What's the deal? You know what I'm saying, Greg? Up and at 'em, ready to rock and roll once again this morning. Got some good stuff going on, so I'm quite sure we'll have a good time, and then we'll lead into the frenzy. And then, and you know, everything is going well. So yesterday was a wild day on social media, but I'm recovered and I'm feeling better today.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the YouTube comments that you've gotten. They haven't been very nice.
But nobody will get in the league with me, though.
It's crazy.
Nobody will get in the league. They talk trash on YouTube in the comments section, but when I say, let's get in the league and have some fun, nobody says nothing.
Mm. Yeah. They're just they're behind the screen hacks, what they are.
E thugs, I thug,
something like that. Scotty, what's going on with you, man?
I'm doing good. Interesting night in the major leagues. Oh, boy, you got to listen to this guy over here, Wall Street man, Alex Smith, 10-0.
Alex Smith
would never be 10-0. Alex Wood,
ten and zero years ago.
Alex Smith. 10-0, and the first Dodger since 1962. To start off 10-0. He's 10-0 with a 1.67 ERA. Excellent call by Wall Street here.
Well, thank you, sir. It is a hot summer morning, but I am excited. I am recharged. I'm feeling really good today.
It is hot out there today.
Yeah, no.
It's like muggy and gross.
Yeah.
That's why we went with the iced coffee. No iced caramel macchiato.
A little watermelon to start the day.
Little watermelon.
By the way, Corey's rocking a very nice hat.
It's
a Yankee hat, but it's a very nice one.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
And also, you know, we'll do this next hour. But Corey had a nice non-auto draft shirt.
Yeah, I'm not an auto draft guy.
Which I find interesting. My dad auto drafts.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Does it work for him?
No, he actually auto drafts his team.
Huh?
He auto drafts his team.
That's his thing.
Does he pre-rank the players?
No. He just, you know, he's like, I don't have time to sit and draft. He did a snake draft for the last 2 years, and he got very excited about it. But now, then the auto draft is just like, I just like waking up one morning, I have a team, and then I'll figure out what to do with it.
I gotta say, Papa Sussman does look like a pimp. He looks pretty damn good.
Oh, thank you.
You know, tell him, if he don't have no time, tell him I draft him.
Will you?
Yeah, oh, well, you know. It's going to be
a check involved.
Yeah, it's going to be something. It'll be a fee involved.
Yes.
I'll give him a family discount.
There you go.
Care of the Fantasy Executive.
You know what? I think he's doing okay with that. Okay. Your services.
All right, cool. I'm just letting him know. I'm just throwing it out there.
Hey, I'm sure he appreciates it. Mm-hmm. On the program today, I want to get in when we come back to a bit of a strategy conversation, because you had the non-auto draft shirt over there. And I wanted to talk about drafting a bit. Snakes and auctions, which Corey says he wants to get more into. I want to talk a little strategy when we return. Roto Experts in the Morning kicks it off when we come back here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're back here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Well, here on the Fantasy Sports.
You should have played this one like the TV show, because you know Scott a jam to a jam. I feel a Scotty Love moment coming on. Let me see Scotty Love get a little early morning action for Scotty Love.
This is going to be a whole new ballgame with Don Burns running the control.
Yeah.
So because you're not going to get like the normal music that Scott gets. You're going to get like better stuff.
Scotty popping and locking.
Yeah. In your opinion, but taste varies. So.
Yes.
But I can groove to anything pretty much.
I know. Yeah. That's why I'm saying I'm interested to see how you groove to this.
Chris Pavone was like more of like a classic rock kind of guy.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think Pavone more played to everybody's strengths, and right. Don Burns plays to Don Burns' strengths.
Right.
So, I like that.
I like it.
I'm always open to like hearing new music and, you know, what's being played, and, you know, that's how I discovered people like Ed Sheeran, you know, what I like. You know,
I love Ed Sheeran. Yeah, yeah.
I love that photograph song. That's great.
You know, it wasn't. Yeah. You know, we could do better than that. But yeah, I'll turn around some other stuff.
Maybe when you turned me and Corey on to fun.
Yeah, it was good. It was great stuff. Great. Yeah. All right. So Corey, completely unplanned, as I'm sure is unrelated to the rundown. He's wearing this anti-auto draft shirt, which I find super interesting.
Because it's auto draft and it's got a slash through it. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I wanted to kick off the show just talking a little. I don't know, strategy or opinion in regards to leagues, because we talk every single day about all these players and the ins and outs, and we're going to get to that, believe me, over the next 2 hours. But I wanted to talk about the why, about not the psychological part of it, but the strategic part of drafting. We sit here and we analyze everything from a snake draft perspective. 12 teams, 14 teams, 15 teams, PPR, standard, so on and so forth. But what about the quirks? What about the weirdness that you can start a draft with? Let me start with the auction. Corey, yesterday on both this show and the Football Frenzy, you made it very clear when we were talking about Julio Jones that you're trying to get more involved into auctions.
Yeah.
And I've been pretty adamant here over the last couple of years that I think auction is 1,000% their way to go. And I'm shocked that, and Scotty really turned me on to that, in football, it's actually much less prevalent than it is in baseball. And I was stunned by it, because to me, there's the same theory by having an auction in baseball. It is in football, and that is you have the opportunity to get any player you want at any time. So, Corey, why do you believe that auctions just haven't taken off in football?
No, it's not enough people doing them yet. I think the only reason why it hasn't taken off is because not a lot of people are into it. They don't know the strategy. They don't know the format. You know, it's kind of, football is so big on the snake draft as a football thing. You get 12 guys, you get in the room, you get the chicken wings, you get the beer, and it goes around like a serpentine. The auction really comes from baseball, and a lot of people, like the majority of fantasy football people, they really not really playing fantasy baseball, at least, you know, not the hardcore ones. Mm-hmm. And the ones that are, they wasn't playing back in the day when the auction was real prevalent. So they don't know. Like Chris Vaccaro, my God, you know, GST Chris Vaccaro, right? He did his first auction, the baseball auction, right? The NFFC, the NFBC joint, did it with Nando, whatever. And he fell in love with it. You feel what I'm saying? This is a dude that's an NFFC Hall of Famer. He's tried it for the first time 2 years ago on the baseball side, fell in love with it, and now every year he signs up for two or three NFFC football auctions. So if you do it, you'll see how much fun it is and how much of a better gameplay experience it is, in my opinion.
Let me talk about the NFFC, because obviously, Matt, you are the big money player at the table. You do not only, you know, a large quantity of leagues, but you know, you put up a good amount of money in your most important leagues. Are any of those auctions...
I do some auctions. The bigger money ones are probably the snake. I do find auctions to be fun. I do like the format. It's just maybe you get so geared up in strategizing for the snake draft and stuff. And I don't know. I mean, for me, I do love doing the auction, but I think maybe I'm so focused on doing the snake and it becomes such a formula kind of thing that I'm trying to break down, that maybe for my bigger leagues that... But I always do like at least two or three.
But it's so interesting to me, especially coming from your background, someone that really, you know, the nickname is Wall Street, but you, because you worked on Wall Street. And to me, the auction would totally play up your alley.
Well, the thing, too, I find in an auction is, you know, you have to be willing to play to the market. Like, if you're in a football auction and you're not willing to spend, like, $60 on one of the top two receivers. Like a few years ago, I think I bid up to like $56 or $57 on Antonio Brown. Mm-hmm. And I should have went $58. And I should have got him. You know, Julio Jones went for like $60 that day. So it's a different dynamic. And sometimes you get people in there that are just, maybe it's their first time, or they just don't care. They're going to spend whatever. I've seen it in baseball where, you know, guys are just going for like $47 when they should go for like $38. So it's a different dynamic. It's fun, but you have to be... Look, and you could say, well, I'm going to get value on other players. To me, it depends. I'm going to do some auctions. I do love the snake format. I do love the third-round reversal as well.
We'll get to that in a second. Scotty, you know, to me, and maybe it's just because on the younger one at the table. Like I grew up in fantasy, and of course you've been doing this longer than anybody. And I grew up in fantasy, actually, really the opposite of you, in that we did a baseball snake because there's 25 guys that you were picking, and it was just like, we're not going to spend the time doing an auction. It was just like, do the snake and move on. And then in football, we started the snake because that was what we were taught. And then we realized, listen, there's 16 rounds or so. Let's do an auction because, you know, Matt just mentioned how the no third round reversal, well, it just gets unfair when everybody, you know, the person that would get Ladainian Tomlinson, it's unfair that this year, for instance, I would have no chance of David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell if I had the 10th pick, let's say. And we realized, simply put, it just wasn't even. There wasn't an even playing field. So we reversed to auction, and it was by far, in my opinion, the best decision we ever made because now everybody had a chance at every player. And then in baseball, we still do a snake. I've done a couple of baseball auctions. It was just a long, long, long process for me. I do basketball auctions, which I've fallen in love with, only because the playing field remains even. Matt's right that there's all the strategy involved, and it's different strategy than the snake, and there's different value to be had. But isn't that what, as analysts, we should be focusing on? Only because, well, anybody can get anybody.
Well, pointing to the reasons, you know, which you originally discussed with Corey, and what you added to that is how long they are, how intense they are. It makes it, you know, it makes a lot more management goes into, because you have to manage your salary cap, you have to manage your budget, etc. It's more challenging than a regular snake draft, and the average fantasy player doesn't really want to get into anything more intense than what they've been taught and what the mainstream is. They feel it's enough to follow the league, to do their waivers, to set their lineup, to stay on top of injuries. Now you add other layers to it, and I feel like only really like the core player, the diehard. Like, we all give reasons why we like it, and I like it. I haven't done one in a long time. I remember when I've done my first one, like it was in the 1990s. I'm like, okay, I'm going to get the two running backs I want. I'm going to spend up for Ricky Williams. You know, that's what I'm going to do, you know, after he had that big year. And, you know, I think that the fantasy players just taught a certain way. The mainstream is very used to how it's going to do. You get people like Jake who want to do away with kickers and stuff like that, and people who preach for IDP. Auction is in that bucket. It's not for the mainstream player. For us, every reason why we should like it, every reason why it's, you know, NFFC, you point to, like third round reversal, mm-hmm. It was born out of that whole thing that just not everybody can have Ladainian Tomlinson as the first. It's kind of unfair sometimes when you put in a random draft order and you don't get one of the top three running backs. You know, and so this gives you a chance at anybody, which is beautiful. But I feel like the average fantasy football player who doesn't even want to touch fantasy baseball is not going to want to touch this.
Well, it's so interesting to me because you love the third round reversal because it wasn't fair getting Ladainian Tomlinson and Sean Alexander at the top, and you're wearing the Sean Alexander jersey today, Scotty. But the auction allows you to – there's no need for the third round reversal because you can have anybody.
Yeah.
Corey, in discussing this, thinking about it, I've kind of come to the realization that the reason auctions aren't more prevalent is because people like us, the four of us sitting here, can analyze it as well, because every auction is different, right? Like, every auction, every price, I can tell you right now, Mike Evans is a first-round player, right? Like, I can tell you right now, Amari Cooper is a second-round player.
Well,
okay. But in an auction, Amari Cooper, depending on when he's nominated, could go for a first-round price. And we can't analyze the price and where they should go like we can in snake draft.
But we can, though. I've already done two auctions already. So I can bring it up. We could talk players. We could talk salary. We could talk roster construction and all of that.
You can do all of that, but what you did in your auction has zero bearing on how my auction will go.
Yeah, but it's still strategy out there. You feel what I'm saying?
Oh, there's strategy out there.
I got the auction strategy, Jack. I know what to do.
You make a good point. It's like guys can go for values later in the draft.
Or early in the draft.
In the draft, guys can get overbid.
No.
I got a $100, $70 theory.
With that, one second. I'm disagreeing with you. It's early where the strategies can be found, where the values can be found. Not
you can
late.
Also see some overbidding early, too, though.
I'll explain where I'm coming from and where you're coming from at Corey's expert strategy when we return here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Some Ed Sheeran for you there, Scott.
This is the one. Yep.
Yeah. This is Photograph.
Yep.
Yeah. Is this does it for you?
I like this song.
Okay. Yeah. Now, before we hit the break, we were chatting about auctions a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, Scotty brought up the point where players can get overvalued early and you get some nice deals late. Well, it's true. You can get some nice deals late because the players, when everyone has no money left, this is the prevailing thought by experts and fans alike that, yes, you can get great deals late. You save your money because when everybody is out of money, you have the money and you can get all these great players. That's true to an extent. But
I wouldn't wait around and play that game.
Especially
in football.
I'll tell you why. You mentioned the Antonio Brown move just a moment ago, Matt, where Antonio Brown was going for 58 and you wouldn't take your finger off, you know, 57 and you stopped. And Julio Jones winds up going for 60 and a couple other players went for 60, you said. Early in the draft, people have this mentality that they need to save money, that there's a better deal always around the corner. And that is simply not always the case. We talk about tiers a lot in fantasy football when you're doing your rankings. And in the last 2 or 3 years, I think tiers have become even more prevalent and how important drafting through tiers are. And it could not be any more huge than in an auction. Rankings mean nothing to me in an auction. Tiers mean everything. Because you want to make sure that you're getting somebody in your top tiers, obviously, right? Before the tier ends. And if you think about it logically, that everybody has a similar enough tier to you, you want to get in this early. Because when the last guy in the tier is up, his value is going way up. It's going to be overdrafted. So if you look, and let's say the top three running backs, right? Ezekiel Elliott, Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson, they're all going to go for a crap ton of money in an auction. But I can almost guarantee you that the guy that is nominated first will go for the least amount of money.
Yeah.
Because you get more and more desperate as it goes on, Corey.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's why I say one thing about the auction is you got to be aggressive. For example, we're less than a month away from the flex, right?
Yes, sir.
So the auction that, you know, that I'm the champion of, mm-hmm. you know, obviously I'll be going back to defend my title. My thing is, I built the team the way I wanted it the night before, right? And I went in there and I went and I got my guys just like that. Now, obviously, the room is going to be different. So, what you said is true, Greg, because when Ezekiel Elliott comes out, number one, yeah. I'm going to go get him because it's a standard league and he's going to run for 1,500 yards.
Yep.
Number two, the people in the room, they know I'm going to go get Ezekiel Elliott.
Sure.
So I'm already banked in. Somebody's going to push me to well over $50 for Zeke. Would that, you okay? Mm-hmm. But what you said is true. When I set that tone for Zeke right there, when David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell come up, the price is going to jump up. The price is going to jump up because, especially with those three running backs, you want somebody out that tier. But you also don't have to play that game. You know what I'm saying? You can go and say, all right, well, I'm not going to get it in that tier. Let me get two out the next tier. So instead of playing 50 for Zeke, give me Devonta Freeman for 37 and give me
Melvin Gordon.
Jordan Howard, Melvin Gordon for that $40 range right there. You feel what I'm saying?
Because if I have Zeke, my
next running back is going to be from a tier a little bit lower on, like a Mike Gillisley type. You know what I mean?
The beauty about what you talk about, though, is that, and it's the same thing in baseball, too, or to a lesser extent, because you got 23 players you're going to start, is you can sit and map out who you want the night before, the week before. But the other thing is when you're in a league with somebody like Corey, who's very experienced, who's on a platform, and maybe people will bid them up, or just like they know you're an experienced player, they know you want a player, they're going to bid you up. You're going to have to pay. If you're a fantasy executive, you're going to have to pay for an Isaiah Crowell because people are listening to this channel and they know you're going to pay up for him.
And I completely understand that. I think people make a mistake in an auction, Matt, where you're just only waiting for value. And I've done this before. It's happened to me where I sat here with all this money and then I realized, oh, crap, there's nobody to spend my money on anymore. Where I sat around waiting for the right deal instead of going out and getting players. I think people are obsessed with the art of the deal.
Yeah, no, I think, well done. I think a lot of people here, you know, you got to have value and all this. I like to be aggressive in auctions. I mean, look, I don't want to blow all my money early, but I'm a, you know, for the most part, like you say, that first guy, like you see with Kershaw, say he gets thrown out, and the difference between him and Scherzer is usually at least $10 in fantasy baseball. Sure. And is Scherzer $10 less than Kershaw? That's mindset you have to have coming in. You have to know these kind of things. And in all fairness, the thing with the auction is it's more about how you're going to manage your money, how you set up your team. Like Corey says, the night before, he's budgeted his team, what he's looking, he's got to spend. In certain instances, the snake draft is harder than the auction because you're kind of pigeonholed into that
you
spot.
Don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and you're pigeonholed, and there's only maybe a certain amount of players each turn that are going to come to you that, you know, without, say, jumping people up draft boards, that you're going to have a shot at. And in that way, I think that's kind of a difficult thing that you got to try to figure that maze out. But I think there's validity in both. I think the bottom line is I think people should try auctions. It's becoming more accessible online with all the sites. And, you know, try that. Take baby steps. And, you know, have a little variation because they're both very fun.
We talked a moment ago, again, Matt, about the third-round reversal.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it still makes sense to do?
I actually do, especially in football, because it's not like baseball where you have to get a roster.
Let me be clear what it is, because
some mainstream listeners may not have done this before, and it could be very confusing. Sometimes even when you're in the draft, you're going... You're saying, well, how is this going to work out, you know, when you're doing it for the first time?
Exactly. Yeah. So in a normal serpentine draft, you go 1 to 12, 12 to 1. It just reverses every single round, right? You know, the odd rounds go down, the even rounds go up. And that, I mean, whatever, you know what I mean. In the third round reversal, the first round is 1 to 12. The second round is 12 to 1. Right. The third round is also 12 to 1. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, it was established because the people that had LT number 1 or Sean Alexander number 2 were just at such a strong advantage back in the day. This was the way to try to even out the people that had picks toward the bottom of the draft.
Yeah, no doubt.
And
so
how does it do it exactly?
So basically what happens is if you had LaDainian Tomlinson and two other top 25 players, you won.
You weren't losing.
Yeah, you won. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that guy with LT, Instead of getting that first player of the third round, shoot him back to the back end of the first round. And this way, the theory was to balance it out. Now,
but only the third round gets reversed.
Only the third round gets reversed.
The fourth is
it don't flip back. And then after the third round, it goes in the regular serpentine.
Yeah.
The thing about it is, and we looked into it and did the math. Remember, we had the kid here.
Mm-hmm.
So, LT's most prevalent year in a point per reception, he averaged 31 points a game. If I'm not mistaken, last year, David Johnson averaged 29 points a game. So you could kind of say, well, David Johnson is flirting with that territory.
I think DJ was more 26, but I could be wrong.
Okay, well, maybe I could be wrong,
but that's still
too.
Good. I think he
if you look at Bell.
When you talk about Johnson, it's the beat reporters in Arizona feel like last year was maybe not even his best year. They could be even better this year.
I think he's on Bruce Arians' fantasy team.
Yeah, no. Everything coming out of Arizona is very positive. Look, he's still young. He got a ton of touches, and he should still get a ton of touches. He's their, he's their best player. Why not feed the beast? I mean, that's the way I would look at it. That's the way I would want to be, especially if you're Bruce Arians, who's an old man, probably in his last. I'm just being honest. You know, this is probably his last hurrah going into the season. So he's going to pull out all the punches to try and get to the playoffs and make a push.
Yeah, and he absolutely will. It's interesting because when people always talk about what draft slot you want to have, right? Like,
That makes. I'm sorry.
That's exactly what I'm getting into, right? Because in the serpentine draft, it doesn't make it as obvious as or the third round reversal, rather. It doesn't make it to me as obvious as I think it is right now, right? Like, right now, if I could choose my draft slot, I'm going to take one of the first three picks. I just think I'm guaranteed something. And then I'm getting, as Corey just said, three top 25 players in my spot. I'm guaranteed it, basically. When you have the third round reversal, it kind of changes everything, Matt.
Yeah, no, I definitely want one of the top picks. But after I'll put in, like, say, my first three, the KDS preference, as they call it, Kentucky Derby style. You used to be able to pick where you wanted to go, and you're not guaranteed to get that spot. But if I don't get one of the top picks, I pretty much want to pick, like, say, eighth or ninth, because I'm going to get, at worst, AJ Green, who I've gotten Beckham at eight. So I'm going to get a top-tier receiver who I feel is one of the top five, and then I can go from there.
Yeah, and when you look at KDS, it's something else that makes fantasy football more fair, too, because you know a lot of leagues just generate a random order out of a hat, and especially when you want to crack at one of those top three running backs or Antonio Brown, if you just to lay back and you know you just don't get a chance out of randomness. Of course, if you're a good fantasy football player, you're going to draft from any spot and feel confident about it. But I like what the KDS does. It gives you an opportunity.
I think Scott makes a good point. And even if you do a randomizer, it should be like, say you get the first pick. You got one. You should be able to choose your draft slot. Maybe you don't want to pick one. I'm just saying, maybe in baseball, football, whatever. Wherever you get, you should be able to pick your spots through the draft.
And what I do in my league, which has been since 2005, the top six teams make the playoffs. In the reverse order of how they finish in the playoffs, they get picks like 12 through 8, right? But I always make an incentive for the teams that don't make the playoffs. The team that finishes with the best non-playoff record gets the first pick.
Sure, and I completely understand that. And, yeah. It makes sense.
We're a yearly league. We're not a keeper league. But we still do it every year. That's how we do the draft order.
It makes sense to me.
Yeah.
When we return from the break, I want to get into the not weird type of leagues, but like not the non-mainstream. Your super flexes, your two quarterbacks, your other weird positions that I don't know, kind of like Scott's fishbowl. We have a lot of stuff going on with the first down points and extra points for the tight ends, right? Like all those type of things I want to know more about because it's not the mainstream. I want to go a little bit off kilter today. Stick around. We break those type of leagues down when we return here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Roto Experts in the Morning, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Scott, Corey, Matt, and myself hanging out with you. We're talking a little off-kilter, right? Like, we talk about all these players. We're getting a lot of players on hour number two. Dr. Ray, Inside Injuries, will join us as well on the program. And coming up next, we'll go at the park with the King. Now, before we do, I wanted to talk about some of these off-kilter leagues a little bit. And I'll start at probably the most popular off-kilter league, which is being the two-quarterback league. Without the super flex, simply a two-quarterback league. Scotty, do you play in any of those at the moment?
I haven't even signed up for any leagues yet, but I'll probably play in a two quarterback league. Essentially, Scott's Fishbowl is one because it has the super flex. But you know, those are a lot of fun. I kind of like, you know, balancing that position against the others because you only start one quarterback, and you know, it makes you value some of those lower tier guys. You know, even if Alex Smith has one of his good games where he runs for a touchdown and throws for 300 yards in 1 week, it helps you out. It's extra strategy. I like it. I'm for it. We get a lot of questions on email advice on rotoexperts.com about it every year. You know, how to draft in the two-quarterback league. And whenever I've been in a two-quarterback league, I always make sure I come out with two quarterbacks in the first four rounds. See, that's a hard and fast rule of mine.
See, here's the thing. I don't think it should be like that, though. The Superflex, the two-quarterback league, is the... You never know what the hell is going to happen when you get in the two-quarterback league draft. You can see you can see the first four picks be quarterbacks,
yep.
Or you can see nobody pick a quarterback at all. So it's really... When you're in the Superflex or a two-quarterback league, you're really at the mercy of the draft. So you really got to go into it blind. But, once the quarterback run starts, put it like this. If I'm on the turn, if I'm on that 1-2, if I'm on that 11-12, take your quarterback because you can get eight up coming back around the other side of the board. But the middle, you kind of have the advantage because you can kind of see, you know, what the people in front of you are doing. If that run does happen, you can still get at least one. You might get caught in that Mike Glennon range, you know, a little bit later on, you know what I mean? But I don't know. It really depends on the flow of the draft if you're in the middle of the draft.
Look, we always talk about a shell of a plan. You can't be hard and fast with anything. The shell of my plan is two quarterbacks in the first four rounds, but of course, every draft is different. My question to you is, though, I've seen you wait in regular leagues, so your quarterback really late. Have you laid back in some two quarterback leagues and like
and got
waited
burnt?
Till after first fourth round to like take your quarterbacks?
Yeah, and I've got burnt.
How late?
Huh?
How late?
I normally would try to jump in and get that first one in the second round. But by the time you come,
But have you been like, I say, I haven't taken my first one to like the fifth, sixth round.
No. You can't. You're not going to have anybody if you do that.
You know, I think what's good about the with the super flex or the two quarter, it's valuing the quarterback correctly. If it's the biggest position in football, it needs to be, you know, right now, in as we say, in a one quarterback league, there's no urgency. I mean, maybe some people feel comfortable. I'm not opposed to taking a quarterback early, but you don't have to. You really don't have to. And this it makes the urgency to get one. And like Scott says, you know, two in the first four rounds is pretty. I think that's pretty much something you want to target. I think that's a smart go at a way to look at it. And I think that's the way fantasy football is kind of moving in that direction. Maybe it's going to take some time. I'm excited to do some more this year. I've been more in the NFFC mold where it's the one quarterback. Every league should have six points per passing touchdown. You gotta give the quarterback more value, even if you're playing in one league.
We're going to look at quarterbacks, actually. I'm glad you brought that up, because when we get into the second hour, I have a whole list of quarterbacks I do want to get into and talk about their value a bit. But it's interesting, because the point you bring up of quarterbacks being 6 points, I've always, traditionally, we spoke about growing up in this, it's always been 4 points for me per touchdown for a quarterback. And it was they were devalued only because they got so many points. And the reason, at least for me, that we started even doing half point was per reception was to bring the wide receiver's value up to where the running backs were, because you were guaranteed running back touches. You weren't guaranteed wide receiver touches. None of this is the case anymore, because the NFL has just changed. That there is so much offense involved, there's so much passing involved, that I understand where Jake comes from, where he doesn't want to include receptions anymore, because you don't need it anymore, because the wide receivers and the offense have just skyrocketed in the NFL. So I do understand where Jake's coming from when it comes to supporting the standard leagues. Matt, I feel like you're itching to say something.
Yeah, no, I saw a tweet. I forget what it was. It was something like, in the, I think it was in the Scott Fishbowl, or like in a standard, like, Trevor Siemian outscores Odell Beckham.
Right.
You know, it changes the landscape drastically. I like the full-point PPR. I think at least a half-point PPR. I think you have to make that move. It's a different game, as you stated correctly. You know, you got to evolve at times. I mean, I think Jake is right in the sense where get rid of the kicker. The kicker should be part of the defense special teams, sure. In my opinion. Like, you draft the Bears, you get the Bears defense and the Bears kicker.
And the kicker.
I think that
but
makes
do you still
more
score
sense.
It the same, sure. The way you're seeing it?
What happened?
You still score it the same, though?
Yeah, well, however yeah. It goes.
Well,
you know,
I'm actually glad you brought that up, Scott.
I like that.
Because I'm seeing kicker scoring being changed. Because I agree with Jake that it should be eliminated. But even if it's not, like, we have completely, like, totally regulated our kicker scoring, where instead of being like 3, 4, 5 for 30, 40, 50 yards, like everything's just worth 3 points.
I don't like that. I like when it's like 4.7 for a 47-yard field goal.
Okay.
Yeah,
or 5.2.
Okay,
because
you're
still talking
it. Because it makes guys like Justin Tucker much more valuable.
If a guy scores like 5 field goals, he's still getting 15 points.
I actually,
and that can change the landscape of any game.
I really like where you're coming from, Matt. I'm going to actually suggest that. That's a really cool rule.
Yeah, I mean, I personally
think it makes
the guys that can do like 50 yards, like Justin Tucker, I almost said Turner. Justin Tucker is like money from beyond 50. He gets the opportunities. He's one of the kickers that does give you an advantage, in my
now,
opinion.
Now, you're saying, though, if Tucker makes a 47-yard field goal, he gets 4.7, but I think that's why it goes against what people like Jake want to do, because they want to eliminate the kickers because they feel like they're so random and like kickers can win you week any week. And with that, you know, with a kicker like Tucker, now you get more of a chance to win in any given week with a kicker.
It makes the Baltimore defense more attractive, in my opinion. So now you get the defense.
I like fusing it with the defense and the kicker.
Because that's true defense special teams.
But does it make it harder when, let's use Justin Tucker in Baltimore, for example. Baltimore's playing Green Bay. You don't want to start the Baltimore defense, but you want Justin Tucker.
I like that. I like the challenge.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. Let's go to the
phone
lines.
It'll never catch on, though.
844-843-6879, 844-843-6879. Kenny from Philly, what's up, man?
Oh, boy.
How you doing, boy?
What's up, Kenny?
What's up, Kenny? Please, you can't come and talk me and Adrian Peterson again, are you?
No. We offer that right now, man. We offer that right now. I was calling to talk about the two quarterback league. It's funny. I've only been in one two quarterback league, but when I was in it, I was actually tempted to actually. As far as the overall draft and to take. It was a 14 teamer, so I was actually tempted to actually draft three quarterbacks overall. I drafted two in the first round, two in the first two rounds, and then of course I went heavy everywhere else. And I had to grab a quarterback at the end of the because if the quarterbacks get hurt, you're done. And then bye weeks, like you're actually kind of tempted to actually take three quarterbacks overall in a draft like that, even if it's only 12 teams, you know.
Don't you gotta need two, Corey?
Yeah, you need, and Kenny's right. You need three quarterbacks because if you have a quarterback go down, it's not gonna be one on the waiver wire. Listen, you're not gonna have a Dak Prescott pop up at the end of preseason every year. This doesn't happen. This doesn't happen in fantasy football with the quarterback position. So it is tough. My thing is get you two solid ones. And then maybe take a gamble on like a Deshaun Kaiser a little bit later on. Maybe a Deshaun Watson, somebody that could hit a little bit further on down in the season, like a Paxton Lynch or a player like that. I think if
you need somebody for a bye week or an injury, yeah. You got to have three.
Yeah. Kenny's right.
I know you guys didn't get to the quarterback yet, but I just wanted to throw three that might be late. Well, two of them definitely might be late sleepers, but the other one is a known guy. The known guy is probably Eli Manning, and the two sleepers I'm thinking about is Philip Rivers and maybe Marcus Mariota. So,
we're gonna get to Mariota.
We really call those guys sleepers.
I don't think they're sleepers.
A lot of people are on Eli this year.
Yeah, you know, Eli's such an interesting case because I think everyone was on him last year, and it was a disaster. I'm not getting back in on Eli in fantasy.
Well, I think everybody has Eli as the possible Matt Ryan of this year.
Yeah,
so bad. I mean,
he's not going to win the MVP.
I get the comparison and why, but I mean, Eli's been pretty bad for 2 years.
He has been. That's why I'm not getting on the Eli thing. We're going to talk about Mariota coming up in a bit. And I'm really also excited to talk about one other guy that's going to lead to a whole other conversation. So that's going to be fun, too. Guys, before we wrap this conversation up, what's the weirdest category you've ever played with, Matt? Or weirdest rule or weirdest thing you've ever done?
Well, one of the things I was going to do when I was going to Vegas was it was a league where you bid on the first two rounds. The first round you bid on that round's draft pick, like whatever you wanted. Say you wanted the number one pick.
With real money.
And then the second round you bid on where you want to pick for the rest of the draft. And I was really excited to do that, but unfortunately I'm not going to Vegas.
Sounds wild. And there's no cap.
There's no cap. But the high scorer gets paid out each week. So you get paid out, like, say, $900 a week if you get the
true question is, how important is that, you know, top pick for you?
Yeah, no. It really makes strategy and budget. How much are you willing to spend?
Right.
And, you know,
sure.
Even that second round, how it changes.
Right. I mean, it's funny because you can spend $0 in the first round and take whatever pick comes to you. All right, whatever. I can win from. That's what Scott would do. Scott says I can win from anywhere, so I'm not going to spend money on a draft slot. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very interesting. Scott, what's the weirdest position or category you've ever played with?
It actually just wasn't football overall. Let me come back on the other side and describe it because it's a little complex.
Well, we can't because when we come back, we go at the park.
All right,
we go and head to Citi Field to talk with Phillies first baseman Tommy Joseph. We'll get to Scott's and Corey's weirdest positions and whatnot on the other side of the top of the hour. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning here on Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
See you later.
Every single weekday where Scott goes to the ballpark, it's the Roto Experts at the park. The king gets an opportunity to chat with the players about some fantasy and about whatever's on his mind, basically. And a lot of it's been sabermetrics, which has been really interesting. And Scotty, last week you had the opportunity to catch up with Tommy Joseph.
Yeah, Tommy Joseph got off to a really bad start in April, but then turned it around in May and continued it for power in June. And I asked Tommy here, what was the reason for the turnaround? Scott Engel of the Fantasy Sports Network here with Tommy Joseph of the Philadelphia Phillies. Tommy, after the first month, things really started to turn around for you. What do you attribute it to? Was it a change in approach, or the way the season went?
Yeah, it was a little bit to do with approach and just staying consistent at the plate, making sure that what I did before the game correlated to what I was going to have to do during the game. Made sure that the adjustments I was making were the right ones, and then just clearing stuff up between the years.
How much did Matt Stairs help you? I know you work with him a lot in the spring too. How much did Matt help you after that first month get in tune?
Yeah, Matt's helped me a lot. He's a great hitting coach. What he brings to the table has been great for me so far. He's a hitting coach that played for a long time and was able to have a lot of success in different areas of the game. So he's definitely helped me grow as a player.
And all these guys on the Phillies that I talk to and, the beat writers, they're singing the praises of Matt Stairs, who's a first-year hitting coach. Last 2 years it was Steve Henderson. He came down from the broadcast booth. He was a broadcaster for 3 years and then became the hitting coach. And Joseph started out hitting 179 with one home run in the first month. Fantasy players talking about cutting him. Rumors about him going to the minor leagues. Hit 300 with seven home runs in May. In June, the batting average went back down 243, but he still hit five home runs and 14 RBIs. He slowed over the last week, 227 with one home run and four RBIs. But with these kind of power players, things are going to come in bunches. And you can hear the full interviews on rotoexperts.com right now on the front page, or go to Audio Boom, iTunes, Google Play. But Joseph is gonna hit him in bunches, and you have to be patient. You had your hot streak, especially May, early part of June. Now maybe sometime after the All-Star break he heats up again and hits him in a barrage. A
lot of Matt Stairs love this week. Yeah. On the Experts.
I mean, probably the most Matt Stairs love since he hit that homer against the Dodgers in, 2008?
Yeah, probably so. A lot of Matt Stairs love from Scotty with the Philadelphia Phillies. What I'm interested in when it comes to the Phillies, I got a lot of these young pitchers up, right? We talked about Aaron Nola yesterday because Scotty got an opportunity, a chance to Nola. And as he said, you can catch that interview on demand on RotoExperts.com, Google Play, iTunes, wherever you listen to us. You can listen to Scotty's interviews at the park. He spoke to Aaron Nola, but there's these other young pitchers with Philly, Ben Lively, Nick Pivetta, that have come up this year. And
Velasquez is getting close to coming back.
Velasquez coming back.
Speaking of Velasquez, there was a quote that he said sometimes he pitches himself as a closer, but not right now. So that's kind of telling you that this kid's kind of like, it's not right. Either he's got to be committed to be a full-time starter, or at some point, just make him
closer.
Matt Gelb, who covers the team for the Philadelphia Inquirer, told me earlier this season he's the most talented pitcher on the team, but he's got to stop trying to blow everybody away and learn how to pitch.
Do you think Ben Lively or Nick Pivetta have fantasy value, Matt?
I like Pivetta better. I mean, Pivetta's flashed some strikeout potential, so I kind of like that.
So if you were, somebody, would you pick up Nick Pivetta tomorrow and starting in San Diego?
Yes, I would.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the Padres pitchers have pitched well, too, though. Perdomo got another win.
Yeah, make a quick pick up here. Okay.
But six when quality we come starts back in a row for Chassin.
When we come back here on the program, Scott will get into some of his weird stuff with the categories in baseball, in football. Roto Experts in the Morning goes live next.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
In the beginning, there was darkness. Then, out of the void, came fire, smoke, Roto. Fantasy excellence begins here.
This is your time.
The Roto Experts in the Morning starts now.
Thursday, July 6th, 2017, and this is the Roto Experts in the Morning, alongside the fantasy executive, Corey Parson, the King, Scott Engel, and Wall Street Matt Modica. My name is Greg Sussman. It gets more ridiculous by the day. Corey, what's going on, man?
Ain't nothing much. Happy to be rocking with everybody this morning. Want to thank everybody on the radio side for coming along, staying with us for hour number two. Obviously, welcome and good morning to the people that's watching on television. Got some big programming coming up, so looking forward to it. You know what I mean? We already started a good discussion. Got Dr. A coming up, so I feel good.
Scotty! How's it hanging?
Feeling good, refreshed.
It's not.
Talking some fantasy football here with my miniature friend to my right. Very interesting to hear what Dr. A will have to say. Madison Bumgarner's getting close to returning. He's on a rehab assignment.
I'm doing well. A little pissed off that Alex Wood wasn't elected to the All-Star team. But, you know, that's life, I guess.
10-0 with a 167 ERA.
What the hell is that?
It doesn't matter. 10 wins, 0 losses.
It doesn't make a difference. He's going to be on the All-Star average. Team on Sunday.
Yeah, no, but it's just he should have been selected.
Yeah.
Scott, before we hit the break, you want to talk about the biggest quirk you've played with.
Yeah, and it's not limited to football. David Ganos, who's now working for Sports Grid behind the scenes here at Anthem, actually used to have these drafts where you played football, basketball, baseball, and hockey, and you had to draft your draft picks. Like, if you were on the board first overall, do you want the number one pick in football? Do you want the number one pick in basketball? And so on and so forth. And you would have to play in all four sports at once.
All right, there you go.
Yeah.
It's kind of like League of Leagues.
Not like League of Leagues, exactly what I was thinking. Yeah. Corey, what's the biggest quirk you think?
I wouldn't even call it a quirk, but this is what I would like to do.
Okay.
The NFFC has a, and some other formats too, have a bare knuckle draft where it's no computers, it's no pens, it's no pads, it's just you and 11 other people sitting at the table drafting players.
Yeah. I've done it twice. I've had.
How is it?
Really?
It's good. We banged it out like, I don't know, what was it? Not that long, an hour and a half, yeah. Maybe.
You can't even write down your lineup, like what you've drafted.
No, you
so
can't.
Far.
You can't
do a pen and paper. Right?
There's no pen, no paper, no phone. Nothing. You take your phone.
It's nothing. Wow. Just Todd Gurley, and then you come back and you're like Keenan Allen. You know what I'm saying? So it really tests your knowledge of the board.
You have no idea who's left.
Yeah, exactly.
Like 2 years ago, we forgot about Melvin Gordon was the one player. We forgot he went in the 10th round,
right?
And stuff like that. But usually, you know, it's like Chris Vaccaro type.
How much of
NFC Hall of Fame? So these guys know.
How much do you get of that guy was picked already?
Not that much.
Not that much.
We have a board, I'm assuming.
They have to have a board.
Yeah.
So you can monitor that. But you got to know the board real good so you can know where players are being drafted at.
100%. When we come back, let's talk about some quarterbacks. Talk a little about two quarterback leagues. Let's pick the quarterbacks down. Next on the Red Raptors in the Morning. This is always my 80s sitcom music, where
starring Greg Sussman.
Right? Where just, like,
introducing the fantasy executive.
And it just like flips to the camera, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
80s movie music montages would have been.
Yeah, 100%.
Wow, if I was in the 80s sitcom, I'd be like the black friend. You know what I'm saying? That come over the house. You know what I mean? Keep him away from your sister.
If you were the 2000s sitcom, you're probably the black friend too.
Yeah, true too. You're right.
Like Greg would be sitting there reading the news. He said, "Did you hear about this guy getting a restraining order?" And then Corey would go, "Hello." And then
the laugh track in the background.
Yeah. Very good.
Let's talk about some quarterbacks, gentlemen.
Yeah, let's do it.
And we often talk about never taking a quarterback early, right? That you don't draft Aaron Rodgers, you don't want to waste an early draft pick on a quarterback. But as I've said to you before, I've really come around on not waiting and waiting and waiting for a quarterback, because there is something to be said for having the ability to put in a quarterback in there and forgetting about it. I hear all the time that, Aaron Rodgers, number one quarterback. But he only averaged 15 points. I mean, he only wound up with 15 or 16 points less than Trevor Siemian, who finishes the 15th quarterback. And I'm just like, all right, I get it. But there is a consistency with Aaron Rodgers that there is not with these other guys. Ben Roethlisberger being the most prime and obvious example. A guy that could throw six touchdowns a week, and then when he's on the road, throw nothing. right? But at the end of the season, when you put all the scores together, it'll look like they're basically the same. That's just not the case. It's not true. I had Drew Brees.
How is that not true?
Because it's true in a rotisserie league, but in a head-to-head week, when you're getting zero touchdowns 1 week from Ben Roethlisberger and six touchdowns another week, it's going to hurt.
Well, with Rodgers, too, let's remember something last year. He did not start off well. What was it, like the first five games?
Awful.
People were panicking over Aaron Rodgers. He still ended up the top-ranked quarterback in terms of total points, but he had a bad start.
He had to get that team to the playoffs, so they was pushing it, and they had no running game.
Once they decided we're not even going to try to run the ball, that's when things obviously turned around for Aaron Rodgers. When it comes to a quarterback, I want to be in that third-ish tier. I want to sit right there, the second or third tier, and I want to get one of these guys, and I don't want to wait until the 12th round. I don't want to do it.
It depends on who you play with, though. It's if you're in a league with one with guys like us, people are going to wait, and you can wait. But if you're in a mainstream league, somebody's going to take Rodgers in the first round or the second round. It depends on who you play with.
Yeah, but Aaron Rodgers last season, he had pretty much 29.5 points the first week, 22.5 points the second week, 36.5 points the third week. He was money all year. He had 2 weeks under 20 points in a 6-point passing touchdown league. So, I mean, I agree with Greg. I am not afraid to take a quarterback earlier than most. And there's like seven that I really want. I mean, I put Kirk Cousins as number seven. I really like Cousins. He's proven he's done it before, those, you know, yards per attempt, adjusted yards per attempt. It's there. Last season, you know, he didn't get it done in the red zone. But I think there is a comfort zone, like he says. And especially if you play where the high scorer of that league gets rewarded. Because there's a difference between Drew Brees, I've said this before, but I want to say it again, between Drew Brees and Tyrod Taylor. And if it's a 100-point difference in weeks 1 to 16, that's how you win the overall scoring title. I'm just being honest with you.
All right, so here's the thing. You said you want to go in that third tier, right, Greg?
Yeah.
Those dudes are all going in the same place. They're going to go in the you know, a little bit more savvier leagues. They're going to go in that 8, 9, 10 range. That whole group. And that group that you're talking about, that tier 3, really outside of my man Jameis, there's no real difference in those guys. So if you want to get a better quarterback, you want to go into that those first two tiers. Who's the quarterback you want?
So
give me an example of the quarterback you want.
So I think if your top tier is what? Rodgers, Brady, Breeze,
Ryan.
Luck. Yep.
Those four guys.
That's the top tier. Ryan's in the next tier.
I think Ryan's in the next tier. So I think I like being in that second tier then.
Okay, so you want Matt Ryan.
Sure, let's use Matt Ryan as an example. Sure.
Are you willing to pay a 6-round draft pick for Matt Ryan?
I think I am, yes.
Okay, if you're willing to pay a 6-round draft pick for Matt Ryan, you can get Matt Ryan in 6. But you are essentially, if you're taking Ryan in 6, 2 rounds after that tier, Matt Ryan more or less has to almost do equal to what he did last season. I'm not willing to take that gamble.
Why does he have to do equal to what he did last season?
Because you're paying for him as a top quarterback. If you're taking him in the 6th round, you kind of might as well take Drew Brees in the 5th or take Aaron Rodgers in the 4th. You feel what I'm saying?
Why can't Matt Ryan do what he did last year? Come close.
Because he won the MVP last year.
I think he had ten drop passes from his wide receiver. Some crazy.
He's got the same guys returning. They're not going to score with the offense.
First of all, the coordinator is different. The passing game is going to be, but Sarkisian is going to put some his stuff on it. He had a phenomenal season. You don't have back-to-back seasons like that.
Look, the odds of Matt Ryan duplicating what he did last year is going to be very slim. Can he do it? There's a possibility that it could happen, but I wouldn't bank on that. I think Corey's right with that. Scott says they do have the same pieces. Sarkisian's talked about he's going to get, we've heard this, you know, this year after year, Julio Jones more red zone targets and stuff like that. But that's like an urban legend. That, you
know. If you draft Rodgers or you draft Brees, guys like that in the first tier, the thing is, it's consistent high level excellence every year. And that's what really sets those guys apart. It's almost like you talk about, like, set it and lock it. you don't worry about the position.
It's like Corey says on like Tyler Eifert. He doesn't want to have to deal with that come Sunday morning. I don't want to have to choose between maybe Marcus Mariota and Tyrod Taylor.
Exactly.
Who's got the better matchup. Yeah. I know I got Aaron Rodgers in there. He's my quarterback. I'll focus on the rest of my
team. There is something to be said for that.
Without a doubt.
Are you willing to pay the fourth round price tag?
I am.
You're really playing for the best.
I mean, look, there's times in the third round I'm looking at drafts. So there's guys that I'm going to take that I'm not supremely confident on, but I don't have a running back yet. I like this guy's upside. I like the guy's situation. I think he's going to be a bell cow, say. But I know Aaron Rodgers, what he's going to do.
Sure.
You have to remember the perspective that he talks from, though, and also that Chris Vaccaro talks from, because we had Chris on last year, and these guys play six-point touchdown passes. The goalposts move when you play a four-point touchdown pass.
I can see you taking
Aaron Rodgers third round, six-point touchdown pass, but in
four-point touchdown leagues, I would definitely back off on the quarterback. But as I stated, in today's game, you got to play with at least 6 points passing. I think that's
Chris Vaccaro says the same thing, but the mainstream, like you talk about, Greg, you said you came up playing 4 points touchdown pass. Now, I don't have hard numbers on it, but I can pretty confidently say that many more players play with the 4 points.
Yes, but like Yahoo, ESPN, and the sites like that should be adjusting it to...
Why?
Because the quarterback is so prevalent in the NFL. It's what you need. You can't win without a good quarterback unless you have an elite, one of the all-time defenses.
Yeah.
That's the only other way you're going to do it. So why not give the quarterback more value?
Because when you... I'm going to have to get my... Doc A is coming up, right?
Yeah, next.
The thing about it is, you have to... If you're taking Aaron Rodgers in the fourth round, you have to be a very skilled drafter, or you're going to have holes in your starting lineup that you're not going to like.
Would you rather have, say, Aaron Rodgers in the fourth or a tight end in the fourth? You know what I'm saying?
In the fourth round, I want to draft a running back or a wide receiver. I want to stick to the skill position players that I can depend on and count on throughout the course of the 16-week season. And with Rodgers, if you're taking Rodgers in 3-4, you're going to have... I'll pull up a team where somebody took Aaron Rodgers in the fourth round, and you'll go through like their projected starting lineup, and you'll be like, oh, wait a minute, maybe he shouldn't have did this.
I'm with Corey. It's like I like to fill out all my running backs and my wide receivers, you know, the flexes, the three wide receivers, and then by round seven, I'm thinking quarterback.
I mean, I don't know. I took the team I had David Johnson with last season. I took Sammy Watkins in the second. So I took Drew Brees in that, we'll say fifth round. Okay? Yeah. I had Brees on that team. And I wound up finishing with the most points. I should have won the best record, too, but I benched Drew Brees when he went to Arrowhead and saw the Brian Hoyer when he broke his damn arm. So that killed. But I was playing against some pretty damn good competition. You know, some Hall of Famers, Mike Leone, Michael Edelman, Nelson Souza, Andy Saxon. But so there's something to say about if I didn't F that up by myself doing a stupid move and just leaving Brees in, that's the difference.
I took Brees last year in the sixth round, I think, because I looked at the board.
That's decent.
I look at the board, I'm just like, all these guys are meh. Let me take a sure thing. And that was true.
Okay, so what about Russell Wilson? Would you take Russell Wilson in the sixth round?
Yes. Yes. I think
sixth
I would.
Round, yeah.
Yes.
I don't know how I feel about Russell Wilson.
I don't know how I feel about Russell Wilson either.
Yeah.
But I think I would do that.
I mean, he can produce 5,000 yards of total offense between throwing the football and running it.
Correct. So I was actually talking about...
He's going to go back to running it more this year, too.
I was talking to...
He can also make me sign a non-disclosure if I draft him.
I was talking to Frank Stample about Russell Wilson yesterday. And he's basically like, everyone's going to buy right back into Russell Wilson like they do every year. And he's going to suck the first half of the year like he does every year before he figures it out in the second half. I'm like, we'll see. More quarterback talk on the other side after Dr. A joins the Roto Experts in the Morning next here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Remember, the Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package is available for you right now at rotoexperts.com. Use the code FREERADIO. When you check out, you get a special discount. It is not just the draft package. It is a full season expert analysis.
Here you go.
Yeah, and check out from our Chris Ventra the latest coaching changes and how they're going to impact schemes and some of your key players.
There you go. All right.
Ready for it?
I'm ready for it, Corey.
All right, this is a team right here that drafted Drew Brees in the fourth round.
Okay.
Right? Now, this team is a little caveat to it, too, because it made a terrible error. It drafted...
Best ball, regular redraft?
This is a regular 12-team redraft.
Okay.
Listen to the starting lineup. Drew Brees, LeSean McCoy, Leonard Fournette, Brandon Marshall, DeSean Jackson, Zay Jones, Jordan Reed, and Adrian Peterson. When he was taking Drew Brees in the fourth round, he should have been taking a better wide receiver. Yeah. Somebody like a Jarvis Landry could have been there in round four. A Golden Tate could have been there in round four. Now he has a situation where he has Zay Jones, an unknown, in his starting lineup. DeSean Jackson, a 60-catch wide receiver in the starting lineup.
Inconsistent.
You know, as his wide receiver two. His wide receiver one to get 100 targets in Brandon Marshall, he's 33 years old. You feel what I'm saying?
He's not the top target.
Not only does he have Drew Brees that he took in the fourth, he comes back in the fifth and takes Jordan Reed.
Right.
That's horrible.
Well, that's
that person. You can't be drafting a quarterback and tight end back to back.
You can't do that.
You know, that's foolishness on his part.
Exactly.
Anytime you draft a quarterback and a tight end together in the first five rounds, you're asking for trouble.
You are, for sure.
I mean, I can give you an example of a team that I drafted Rodgers in the third round. I'll only really do like the first four rounds was his best ball and get skewed. But I started out A.J. Green, Dez Bryant, Aaron Rodgers. And in the fourth round, I took Lynch. Probably today, I might even take Isaiah Crowell. I had that option right there. So, I mean, there are ways you can do
What's wrong with that?
Huh?
What's wrong with that?
What's the rest of the team sound like?
Keenan Allen, Danny Woodhead. Then I went, you know, I got my second
quarterback. What's wrong? Wait, so what is wrong with starting with Aaron Rodgers? Then you have Woodhead and Crowell, because you could have taken Crowell, you said. Mm-hmm. Crowell and Woodhead. Your wide receivers are Dez and A.J. Green.
And I got Keenan Allen in fifth.
And Keenan Allen's your third wide receiver. What is wrong with that?
Who's Danny Woodhead in sixth?
Tight end is Kyle Rudolph and Cameron Brink.
Well, that's why Matt is sitting up here. He's experienced.
Yeah. He can
pull it off. Yeah. Everybody can't pull it off.
This guy did not pull it off.
No, this guy right here did not pull it off.
He did make the mistake, especially going with the tight. Look, I love Jordan Reed. And Jordan Reed, if he plays the 16 games and is healthy, isn't a bad pick where he took him. But Scott said it, people said You just, in those first four rounds, I don't see how you can take a tight end and a quarterback.
Don't go chasing waterfalls.
You said a moment ago, Matt, that your number seven guy is Kirk Cousins. He's your guy. You look at all these metrics, and you love Kirk Cousins. Corey, you've been adamant this offseason that Jameis is your boy, is your son.
That's my son, Jameis. Let's roll. Let's rock and roll.
Who would you rather have, Kirk Cousins or Jameis Winston?
I would take Jameis Winston one spot ahead of Kirk Cousins.
And I'm the opposite. I move Cousins above Winston. I do think Winston has the ability this season to make that step, but I'm just going to take the guy that's done it. The completion percentage is, you know, one of the tops in the NFL, if not the best. And he still, look at the weapons he has out there. You know, he's got Jordan Reed, he's got Crowder, he's got Pryor, and if Doxson could ever be what people say he's going to be.
I like Winston, but I'm going to take Cousins. He's already proven that he can nearly hit 5,000 yards. Well, there might be a little regression this year, and I think if I have to split hairs, you're talking about Winston, you know, does have a tendency to throw interceptions.
That doesn't mean nothing for fantasy football, Scott.
Yes, that's
it
minus does,
it
two.
It means nothing for fantasy
that's
football.
That's minus two.
Interceptions are irrelevant to
that's,
fantasy
that,
football.
That's
if
minus
I, if,
two.
If my quarterback is throwing a lot of interceptions, you know what that means? When he comes back on the field for the next drive, he's going to keep gunning it.
Winston, when you split the hairs between these two guys, though,
they might throw the same amount of touchdown passes, the same amount of yardage.
Interceptions are minus two. That's an NFL thing.
It counts.
It's not a fantasy thing.
Look, there are a lot
you
of
can have
there
that
are a lot
two.
Of guys.
But see, if
there are a lot of guys that throw a lot, and it doesn't
Scott,
matter.
But I'm,
splitting,
is,
I'm splitting the hairs between the two, though.
But interceptions
I have a
is irrelevant.
Rank right next
interceptions
to each other.
Are relevant to the point because if he throws an interception and he goes down 21-0, that means he's coming back and he's continuing to keep throwing and gunning. So the interceptions almost is a good thing for fantasy.
Look,
the minus, I'm not
worried
about
that,
the minus
yes,
two.
But they're going to throw so much.
The only thing about
Kirk
the interceptions is if they bench
points.
Him. They're not going to bench him.
Look, I like Jameis Winston, but you're talking about the difference between him and Kirk Cousins. Give me the guy that doesn't turn the ball over because that's minus 12 points in my season.
I don't like that don't turn the ball over thing. That's not – interceptions is not a thing in the fantasy for me. Unless he's in danger of losing his jobs, I'm not concerned
with
interceptions.
When you look at a guy like Blake Bortles, he's going to throw a ton of picks. He's going to throw a ton of yards.
We're going to agree with you. Blake Bortles to Jameis Winston.
I'm not. Stop putting words in my mouth.
We're going to get to Blake Bortles in a bit. But right now, we're going to be joined by Dr. A from Inside Injuries. Good morning, doctor.
Morning, guys. So, I felt like I walked into a firestorm there.
Hey, Doc, it's getting serious in here.
Yeah,
Doc,
Corey's making stuff up again. You're going to have to come examine him because I'm going to punch him out.
Yelling doesn't make you right, though. That's one thing I do want to say.
We made it a doctor for Scott's coughing now.
Get some water.
I don't like when people make up stuff about me. It's not right. I never said that.
Doc, let's get into some baseball injuries here. I want to get into the returning Mike Trout because I've been waiting with bated breath for him to come back, and it seems like we are just days away now. I know when we asked you about Mike Trout last time, he said, listen, he needs this full time to recover. He's going to begin a minor league rehab. Yesterday, I think he began a minor league rehab assignment. He's going to play through the weekend, and he could be back as early as next Friday when the Angels return to the diamond. Will Mike Trout be healthy and ready to go next Friday?
I think it's a little optimistic, extremely optimistic to think that he'll be back next Friday and be fully at peak health and ready to go. It's more likely going to be another 2 to 3 weeks. What you'll see probably from where he'll get back at least up to above average health. Right now, he's still at high injury risk right now. He had a grade 3 ulnar collateral ligament tear, and so it's still takes pretty much 6 to 8 weeks to really, really rehab from that. And so I would say no to the question, but I would say that shortly after the All-Star break, he should be very, very close. If he does come back on as soon as you had mentioned, I just don't think that he'll be at peak health at that time, and there's he'll be probably at elevated injury risk. And, we've talked about this before. Guys that we have still listed at elevated injury risk coming back from injury that come back too soon talk about it time and time again, had a very high risk of re-injury. They really, really, that last week or two makes a big difference, especially when they have to get themselves into playing shape. So, I would say about a week or two after the All-Star break, and they should be at peak health.
Keon Keeler of the Rangers, we all had him ticket as the new closer here. And unfortunately, right after the lineup deadline on Monday, about 2.5 hours of it, he goes on the DL. When is he coming back? There are people actually have him in their lineups and not getting any points from him this week.
Yeah, and so this app really, really tells a story. So, it's just like this random grade 1 shoulder injury. However, in his past, he's had a throwing shoulder. Like I've always said, throwing shoulder injuries, obviously, to pitchers is an extremely sensitive type of injury. And so he's at, even though it's a grade 1 shoulder injury, mild strain, he's been on the DL before with a few previous throwing shoulder injuries. Most recently, last year, he had a grade 2 elbow injury that put some time on the DL. And so right now he's at elevated injury risk and below average. Currently we're showing that he'll come back. He should be back in about 3 weeks. And so, right now they shouldn't even play him. He needs all of that inflammation in his shoulder and his tendons and his rotator cuff, et cetera, needs to go down until he starts to rehab and play and, sort of practice again. So he's at elevated injury risk, below average. You rest for 2 to 3 weeks, probably 3 weeks, it should go back down to low and above average at least.
Hey, Doc, since we don't trust the Mets medical staff and we trust you, let's talk about the franchise, Michael Conforto. What's the deal with him? How long are we looking here?
Okay, and so, we've had him before the season, at elevated injury risk, not at peak health before the season. Obviously, the good news is his x-rays are negative, right? So he doesn't have a fracture. but he probably has a significant bone bruise and probably a soft tissue bruise, which prevents him from gripping the bat appropriately. And so, you know, that's why he sort of landed on the DL. He's had a, you know, in the beginning of the year, you know, we listed him at elevated injury risk because if you look at his history sort of portfolio of injuries, you know, he's had these sort of these ticky-tack type of injuries. And, you know, so we've had him at elevated injury risk, you know, because it's not a fracture, a 2.5 to 3 week, probably, you know, the most likely algorithm is saying is 2 weeks, and he should be back to low and above average right now. So it's about 2 weeks.
Dr. A, Inside Injuries, we appreciate you coming on. I realize a day late, but the information was still great. Dr. A, we appreciate the time, my friend.
All right, thanks, guys. Talk to you next week.
Awesome, beautiful. And then, of course, download the Inside Injuries app. You know, Corey uses it constantly to discuss injuries, and it's awesome, right, Corey?
Follow yeah, no, on no Twitter, doubt. Too. No doubt. Hey, Dr. A, I put Tyler Eifert in the app. Well, he's gone, right? But, Doc, I put Tyler Eifert in the app. And the phone started shaking and it caught on fire. It's very
Samsung
scary.
Samsung 7.
When we come back on the Roto Experts in the morning, Scott mentioned Blake Bortles. We're talking about Blake Bortles when we return here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. All right, Corey, you said you found another team with Aaron Rodgers on it.
Yeah. It's another team that Aaron Rodgers was drafted in the fourth round of a draft. Now, this is MFL, My Fantasy League, Experts MFL 10. Here's the starting lineup. Aaron Rodgers, Ezekiel Elliott, Kareem Hunt, Doug Baldwin, Randall Cobb, Stephon Diggs, Tyler Eifert, and the flex Ameer Abdullah. That team is pitiful.
That's just a terrible team, but I'm going to... In Aaron Rodgers' defense, that was some terrible drafting. I mean, I don't know.
It could have been better if he didn't take Rodgers in the fourth.
Ameer Abdullah just his second running back.
We don't know nothing.
As much as we like Hunt, though, he's got to earn it first.
We know nothing about him. The wide receiver two on the team is Randall Cobb. Yeah, he could bounce back. Diggs, listen.
Diggs is a three, but talking about he's got two wide receiver threes and a wide receiver one. Maybe.
Baldwin
is a two.
That balance on that team is not proper because this person didn't know how to draft Aaron Rodgers and do it in the correct way. Now, Greg, you were saying something about about Blake Bortles.
So, Blake Bortles, Scotty mentioned him ultimately. It was in regards to interceptions. Not necessarily a comparison between him and Jameis Winston.
I hope not.
But more so just the fact that Blake Bortles turns the ball over an extraordinary amount. What is Blake Bortles' fantasy value in 2017? Because he is somebody... Much like, oddly enough, a Tyreek Hill, a Ted Ginn Jr., who puts up points, right? These guys put up points, but I have no idea where I should be drafting Blake Bortles.
Well, it depends on how you view the Jacksonville team this year. I thought last year it would take them a year or so for the defense to gel. I think this year they do gel. I think now they have a running back who can be a bell cow. They've never had a running game. So if all these factors come into play... Blake Bortles isn't going to be making 625 attempts.
There you go.
And that's the main thing you have to look at. So they want to play a different style of ball. Does that mean that, Blake Bortles isn't going to be good? Blake Bortles could still have good games. I like Marcus Lee's ascension. Allen Robinson is still a top-end talent. So, and if you have a running game, you can do some play action. He can feed off of that. It could make him better. But... I think where he's going is pretty much he is, you know.
You can get him the last pick of the draft. But what Matt is talking about is it could be we're predicting a change in the offense in Jacksonville. Less Blake Bortles going back winging it, more control the game with the running game, and then let the defense try to win the game for you with the kids like Fowler and Ramsey and the good defense they're putting together. Last season, Blake Bortles threw 16 interceptions. He finishes like quarterback 10 in fantasy. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make a difference to interceptions.
They don't want to have him drop back and have one or two things happen last year from a pure football perspective. He was getting sacked an infinitesimal amount of times, and he was throwing picks. And still, you know, the fact that, you know, he finished where he did, he still threw 23 touchdown passes. The attempts are going to go down this year, more balanced offense.
Yeah, the deep passing game is what really killed him last year and Allen Robinson. Mm-hmm. That just dried up and missed. He was horrific. If you look at, you do a deep dive in deep passer ratings and stuff like that. So I think it's an evolution of an offense. I mean, I don't think he's going to not put up any kind of points, but I think where he's going now is better suited.
Is there a bigger difference in the NFL of a guy that is an atrocious football player but a very good fantasy player?
No, I don't think it's ever. I don't think it's ever been in the history of fantasy sports, a dude who is so pitiful of a player professionally, but gets it done for fantasy, and it just goes purely straight to the volume. He had 16 picks last year. Jameis had 18. Rivers had 21.
Yeah,
these are all top fantasy quarterbacks, though. And interceptions are mean nothing to these guys.
Listen, I understand.
There was one major difference in his game last year, though. There really was. It was, I mean, the attempts are pretty much the same as 2015, 2016. Completion percentage exactly the same, pretty much. And touchdowns, 35 to 23.
There sure. you go.
But ultimately, as I said, you, and Corey said it as well, there's not a bigger difference in fantasy sports if a guy that's very bad at his actual job,
but it's playing, very,
but it's very good.
You can ride him. It's
when
so, it's
comes
ugly.
To fantasy sports.
It's ugly watching him do. You can't put it like this. Don't watch it. Just wake up and be like, oh,
right.
I got.
There's a reason he's 11 and 34.
He gave me 23 fantasy points.
Correct.
Okay, fine.
It's
thank
a difference.
God,
between
I didn't
real
have
NFL
to watch that.
And fantasy. It's,
the game they played last year against the Tennessee Titans. That dude was effing horrific.
Correct.
And he scored 34 fantasy points.
It was the worst game I've ever seen a quarterback play. Seriously.
It was
he
horrible.
Wasn't even looking. He was just throwing interceptions.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
He finished the game with 34 fantasy points.
So I wanted to try to compile a list of some sort of other good players that play that are good fantasy players but are terrible real-life players. The guys that Corey so aptly says, don't watch. Just look at your score, like Scott does at like 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah, right.
And then, and then be like, oh, what a great game from Blake Bortles, right? Who are other guys like that? So I've come up with basically all of the Jaguars.
Yeah.
And because Allen Hurns, I know Marquise Lee's getting a little better. You don't look like, I don't watch Allen Hurns play, but all of a sudden he has a couple touchdowns. It's 2 years ago. And you never knew how it happened, but he always went up in the end zone. He wasn't good.
Yeah, boy, our boy Pat Mayo will put Mark Ingram on that list.
He will. Yeah. Oh, hell, absolutely
can
put Mark Ingram
on that
list.
Can you put Frank Gore on that list?
Frank Gore is on my list, actually. Well, you know that because you have the rundown open. But Frank Gore is on my list. Frank Gore is a 33, 34-year-old running back that, for the Colts, is kind of like, kind of boring. But for our purposes, he finishes as a very solid running back. At this point in his career, Frank Gore is absolutely a better fantasy player than he is a real-life player. I think Kelvin Benjamin is a much better fantasy player than a real life player.
He's not a good either or.
Yeah, I don't think he's that good. He had a good first 2 weeks last year. I'll give him that. He's still there, quote unquote, number one wide receiver. But like
wasn't
like
there
still
a very short period where you could have said that about Matt Asiata?
Sure,
2 years ago.
Absolutely, yeah. Matt Asiata is a fine example, Scotty.
Latavius Murray.
Latavius Murray is a perfect example.
Nothing special about Latavius Murray, but he scored 13 touchdowns last year.
But there's all these guys that are not good in the NFL, for lack of a better term. But for our fantasy purposes, they matter.
And 1 week a year, it might be John Kuhn.
John Kuhn, sure. Yeah. You know, I think you could also look to the tight end position. I think you could look.
Who would you say a tight end is? Just like, is Antonio Gates still a good football player?
I don't know if he's a good fantasy player anymore either.
Yeah.
I think
if he's in third downs and red zones, that might make
so sense. So I think Tyler Eifert fits the bill a little bit.
Yeah, I mean,
I know I got to see him play first.
You don't need to see him play. You just know when you put him in the lineup, he's going to be targeting the red zone incessantly.
But yeah.
Is he going to be healthy? Is he going to be healthy for week one? That's really the question.
That is really the question, right?
Vernon Davis a few years ago, maybe?
Vernon Davis last year.
Yeah.
Vernon Davis was beast last year.
He was. Yeah, absolutely. Back in D.C. It was nice to see. All right, so those are some of the players that I had. That were, I thought, good fantasy players, bad real-life players. Back to the quarterbacks here. Spoke about Bortles and Jameis and Kirk Cousins, but Kenny brought up a name before that I wanted to bring up to you guys, and that's Marcus Mariota.
Mm-hmm.
You said a little while ago, Matt, that the reason that you get in on an Aaron Rodgers, a Drew Brees, a Matt Ryan, a Russell Wilson is because you don't want to have to think, oh, man, Marcus Mariota or Tyrod Taylor this week, Marcus Mariota or whoever this week. And it's a question you have to have.
Play.
So last year, I had Marcus Mariota. I picked him up in a league where I actually owned Cam Newton. We'll talk about Cam Newton in a second.
You said the magic word. You picked him up.
Correct. Correct. I picked up Marcus Mariota last year.
Mariota was different because Mariota got off to a slow start and people were dropping him after week two. So he was being drafted, but he was back on the wire. He was on the wire because he got off to that slow start last year.
And I picked him up because I saw the schedule, and the schedule was like the easiest thing ever. And he dominated that schedule.
Took advantage of it.
Through weeks 9 through 14, I mean, he was, I believe, one of the top five quarterback in fantasy football.
He was.
And then the schedule got tougher, and he wasn't as good anymore. Now, Marcus Mariota, given how good he was last year, people are expecting bigger things. People are going to draft him earlier. People are going to expect numbers that he puts up week after week. Matt, can he do it? Can he be a reliable fantasy starter week in and week out in 2017?
Can he do it? Yes. Am I sold? No. I mean, they put the pieces there for him. They went out. They drafted the number one wide receiver. They signed Eric Decker. You still got the guy that I think has got to own Matthews as the wide receiver. That's the guy that I want this year as of now. I mean, that could change in the next month or two after everything starts up. But the pieces are there. You got that running game. So even if Murray goes down, you got Henry to come in. So I'm not worried about that. It's a much improved team. This is, what, year three for him as well. So everything is pointing in those signs. But am I sold? No.
Can he throw for 4,000 yards?
If he weapons are there.
If he throws for 4,000 yards, he'll run for 400. That's 4,400 yards of total offense. That'll bring in about 30 touchdowns. That'll make him, he'll finish again as a QB1. He has the pieces now. The attempts are going to have to go up. And I don't think they bring the pieces there for the attempts not to go up. I know exotic smash mouth running the football. That's the MO on that offense. He was very efficient last year. Remember, I used to make fun of him because he was, you know, he had them slippers on from Hawaii and stuff like that. I was wrong. This kid can play, so... I still take Jameis Winston.
He could certainly be QB1, but with that running game, the ceiling of where he can be is kind of limited. But you know, when you talk about efficiency and he can run the ball too, I think he'd certainly be a top 10 QB this year.
But he's going to have to throw for 4,000 yards.
Yeah, he is.
He's got a cavalcade of weapons now.
Do you take him over Matthew Stafford or Philip Rivers?
No, hell no.
Guys that do it every year.
I think
some people are putting him.
I'll take him over Rivers. I'll take Mariota over Rivers, but I'm not taking Mariota over Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, but Rivers gets like 4,400 yards and 30 touchdowns.
That offense could change. Matthew Stafford's offense is going to be the same.
Stafford has less weaponry and Mariota can run the ball.
Stafford don't got no damn running back.
That's true.
Would you rather have Marcus Mariota or Dak Prescott?
Who are you talking to me?
Funny thing, I drafted Mariota in my last draft, and the next round I went and got Dak Prescott.
Okay.
Right around that turn.
Corey?
I probably would go Mariota.
Scott?
Dak Prescott.
Mariota or Eli Manning?
Mariota.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to go Mariota. I'm just...
Mariota.
When we come back... we're going to do one last on Marcus Mariota to wrap up the program. Marcus Mariota or Cam Newton. Think about that as we wrap up the show. Coming up next.
Yo, if you're not watching
a Grateful Dead concert,
yo, if you're not watching, yo, this dude is a nut. He was doing some kind of rock and roll air salsa thing just now.
So I left you before the break with one question, the final question, I should say. Marcus Mariota or Cam Newton?
This guy effing stinks, right? He sucks, Cam. Let me not say he sucks. Put it like this. He's going to be a bum this year. I would not touch him this year. He is going to be a bum. He's going to have a career low in rushing attempts, which means he'll have a career low in rushing yards and rushing touchdowns. His passing is pathetic. I would not touch this guy. Not at all.
He used to be the one thing. He used to be the high guy. Cam Newton.
Yeah.
The offense is changing. It's a different. It's a totally different thing. The offense is changing. You're not going to be able to bank 500-600 rushing yards with 10 rushing touchdowns. That's where all the value came from.
He has already come out and said, I realize I don't have to be the man anymore. And for that, it translates into me, well, you can't be the man for fantasy anymore either.
So you both say Marcus Mariota.
Yes.
Matt.
Every time I write off Cam Newton, he turns into Superman. It's really tough for me here because I know the offense is changing. He says he's not going to be the man. But you know what? When the whistle blows, the ball's kicked off, and ball's in his hand, he's going to try and be the man. I don't think that's going to stop. It's really close for me. I want to keep pushing Cam down.
I got him at 16 right now.
I don't have him that low. But I want to keep pushing him down, but I think you can't. And look, the completion percentage is horrible and all this stuff we can point to. And then the guy puts up like an MVP season. So I don't know. With the offense, I'm going to say Cam here, but it's like a coin flip for me.
I think I'd say Mariota as well, for the record. Scott,
Mariota's on the way up.
I agree.
Cam is either trending or staying this down. Maybe staying the
Cam
same.
Needs to be a better NFL player, not a fantasy asset.
Fair enough. Now, Scott, you said you're the only one to take Dak Prescott over Marcus Mariota here. How come you did that?
I think, you know, Prescott is just, as a pure NFL player, the decision-making, the poise, everything. And I think Dez is going to have a monster year, and I think that's really going to help elevate Prescott passing-wise.
You talk about poise, decision-making. Mariota has all that, too. Mariota's thrown zero red zone interceptions in his entire career.
That's what makes Mariota.
I'm not saying I don't like Mariota, but
is red zone.
Yeah, it just
is like, Dak going to throw for 4,000 yards?
I think so.
Really?
Yeah.
He's making a lot of offense from this Dallas Cowboys team.
Well, the defense is going to be bad. They're going to be in a lot of shootouts.
I don't think the defense would be bad.
No, the defense would be much
improved.
You
know, I think the secondary's an issue. I don't know if they'll get enough of a pass rush. I think they're going to play in a lot of high-scoring games.
Not if they taking the air out the football with Ezekiel Elliott.
Which is what they'll be doing, obviously.
I think they have a lot of trouble stopping opposing offenses.
See, I think Dak can hit 4,000 yards passing. I think he can.
Okay.
I think he can.
Would you have to revise your answer?
He'll be in that 37, 38. If he hits 4,000, he's going to go crazy.
Of every possession.
And Dak
threw four interceptions last year.
And Dak is going. Interceptions don't mean nothing for fantasy, guys.
In certain situations, they do.
This is the Roto Experts in the Morning, part of the Roto Experts block, which means the Fantasy Football Frenzy presented by Roto Experts is up next with Corey, Matt, and the all-in kid, Jake Seeley, who I'm sure will jump into the conversation. Corey, what's coming up next?
Coming up next on the program, on the Fantasy Football Frenzy, me, Matt, and Jake will talk about some players with second-round ADPs. Also got some of the best values that are going on early in drafts. We got some coaching changes that we can discuss. Our homeboy from Football Guy, Jeff Hosley, I think I said his name correctly, he'll drop by the program. And, of course, your phone call. Start lining them up right now.
There you go. For Wall Street, Matt Modica. For the King, Scott Engel. For the fantasy executive, Corey Parsons. My name is Greg Sutton. Thank you so much for joining us here on a Thursday. Have a fantastic rest of your Thursday, and we'll see you tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Eastern, for another edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.